This weekend starts right after this.
When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.
Compass Media Networks. This is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
Sticky fingers for the holidays. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up during this program.
Tis the season for stealing. Shoplifting is a major problem for retailers this time of year. Find out the items that Americans are swiping the most.
Need a little exercise after the Thanksgiving feast? Hear the trendy workout that requires no equipment and that you can do while watching football today.
It's not too soon to get your credit score ready if you plan to buy a home next spring. We'll identify how the two are connected.
And the latest attempt to more precisely diagnose concussions.
The holy grail of brain science is to try and get what it looks like it will be a blood test that will immediately be able to show you whether you've had a traumatic brain injury or even a mild traumatic brain injury. And that's what they're working towards.
Wall Street Journal sports writer Matthew Futterman has a look at what a blood test could tell us about a concussion. He's here in about 10 minutes. Well, the post-election confusion over the fate of Obamacare has only complicated the already difficult choices faced by middle-class consumers. Premiums and deductibles, as you know, soared in many parts of the country after the departure of several large insurance companies from the Affordable Care Act exchanges for 2017. Jane O'Donnell, healthcare policy reporter at USA Today, says that's led many to fret about how to either afford insurance or how to get by without it. Jane, what are you hearing?
Well, it's confused a lot of people. There are people now wondering, do they even need to get insurance? These are people that, you know, might not be inclined and not realize how important it is. They hear all the commentary about after the election, where Obamacare is going to get repealed. Well, if it gets repealed, that means I don't have to pay a penalty. I don't need insurance. Well, it could take a whole lot longer than it sounds on the campaign trail. And as of now, you have to have insurance. And of course, we all know it's a really good idea to have insurance. Yeah. It's very important whether or not you're sick now. You never know what can happen. So that's the big one. But also, that's one of the big ones, I should say. But affordability is a very big issue. If you're not getting a decent subsidy, it can be very expensive to get the plans. Particularly if you live in states that lost a lot of insurers.
Is this what that one family referred to as the middle class nightmare?
Yes, and that's been the case since the beginning. I mean, this is done. The Affordable Care Act, I don't think anyone would argue that would argue against the fact it has done an awful lot for a lot of people, particularly the low income people in states that are able to get Medicaid coverage, and those who get fairly good sized tax credits and subsidies. But those who can't get those, particularly if they live in a state like North Carolina or Arizona, are having a very difficult time affording their insurance.
Yeah. Boy, explain this family that had like a $7,000 deductible per family member out in Oregon.
Yeah, that's what they were facing. I mean, there is a cap on what a family deductible could be, but it's still a lot of money. And what I hear from people a lot, and we get comments constantly, yeah, is that it doesn't seem like insurance. And I hear that from people that have employer coverage too, that they're paying so much out of pocket that it really doesn't feel like insurance. Mm. But the people that have cancer, they feel very differently.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
people that have, high out-of-pocket costs, the fact that they're finally, they're capped at, say, I believe it's close to $7,000, and also there's you don't have these lifetime caps that preceded the ACA where people might, would frequently go bankrupt.
Mm. We're speaking with Jane O'Donnell, healthcare policy reporter at USA Today. Her story is called High Health Insurance Costs Prompt Tough Choices. All right, explain too, because you did a nice job of kind of listing the alternatives here if you feel like you're really stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, some of these were new to me. How about you? I mean, I hadn't heard of these Christian health sharing plans, and I'm certainly not advocating for one thing or another, but that's something that's becoming increasingly common. Insurance brokers were talking about how they knew about them, but people are frequently asking about them now. But they're not literally insurance, but, you know, people who are similarly Christian, at least in the more religious ones, are, all are paying in, and then they will pay for certain problems. About the only thing that you really have to worry about is if you go against one of these quote-unquote morals clauses. So if you were to get in a drunk driving crash or you needed addiction treatment, you're in trouble because then you haven't lived the Christian lifestyle. So that's something people are looking at. I mean, there's catastrophic insurance. If you're under 30, you can get those plans on the exchange. If you're over 30, you can get a plan, but you're not necessarily going to avoid the penalty. But at least you'll have something that will protect you if something terrible were to happen.
What about these community health centers?
Yeah, I mean that's something I hear a lot from people who are opponents of the Affordable Care Act. They'll say, well, you know, these people could always get care before, and these health clinics, you know, were and are still good options for people, but they're facing pretty severe cuts in their funding, and they do operate on a sliding scale, and it still can be pretty difficult. I mean, if you have cancer, that may well not be your best option. I don't know. The access to specialists are going to be the big, a big hole in coverage for a lot of these people, including people on Medicaid.
Yeah.
It can be very difficult to get a specialist.
Thanks, Jane. Jane O'Donnell, healthcare policy reporter at USA Today. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Looking for the next place to grow or expand your business? Why not look to a state that's one of America's top 10 for business, where 2,000 burdensome regulations were eliminated over the past 5 years and is now home to the sixth best entrepreneurial climate. All this and more awaits you in the state of Michigan, the state that should be the number one choice for your business. Go to MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Again, that's MichiganBusiness.org to learn more. Is asking football players simple questions the best way to diagnose concussions? A new paper is expected to give a boost to a more scientific approach, a blood test that can quickly diagnose concussions more effectively than simple clinical methods used by doctors and trainers. It's a story from Wall Street Journal sports reporter Matthew Futterman. Matt set this up.
There's a great deal of frustration with the fact that here we are in 2016, and the way we diagnose, a pretty serious injury is we ask someone if they know their birthday or if they know who the president is or where they are. And, you know, while those are certainly perfectly fine diagnostic questions, you'd like to be backed up with some medical evidence the way things function in the rest of the medical world. Mm-hmm. And that's the holy grail of brain science, is to try and get what it looks like it will be a blood test that will immediately be able to show you whether you've had a traumatic brain injury or even a mild traumatic brain injury. And that's what they're working towards, and that's what seems to be, they're getting closer every day. And thanks to increasingly sophisticated machinery, which is able to track certain proteins in the blood that get released when the brain is injured.
Wow. Just like a cholesterol check, for example, this would be like?
Well, eventually. I mean, what the recent studies have shown, and there's a study coming out in the Journal of Neurology in the coming weeks, is that, you know, when someone, if someone suffers a brain injury, if you can get a sample of blood from them within 6 hours, and you don't even need very much blood, and you put it through this very sophisticated blood analysis machine, you can see what damage has been done, and you can from that information very accurately predict whether the person is going to be able to go back on the field within 10 days or is going to have to sit out for 3 weeks. You can gauge the severity of the concussion by those what are called biomarkers. So the idea is to get that machinery smaller, get that test as accurate as possible, and by that, once that happens, we'll really have a good idea on what is dangerous. And, you know, the real danger, I think, for football moving forward, and for all contact sports, but I would say especially football because there is contact really on every play, the real danger is that you're going to see brain damage on, you could potentially be seeing brain damage on every tackle. And that's the kind of information that I think people have been yearning for, and trying to wonder if it's available, and I think that's where we're headed.
I'm not sure the NFL would want to know that if there were a brain injury on every play.
Yeah, let's set aside the NFL for the moment, because I think it's probably likely that every NFL tackle is a pretty dangerous one. It's pretty jarring. And if not everyone, but a lot of them are. But, you know, let's go to eighth grade football. And what if you can, what are we going, I mean, the question is, what are we going to see, are the medical implications, the biological medical implications of, you know, a tackle in Pop Warner football, a tackle in high school football. And once parents and kids are armed with that sort of information, that's gonna bring on another level of decision making about how participatory they want to be with this sport.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal sports writer Matthew Futterman. His piece is called A Game Changer for Diagnosing Concussions in the NFL. How about the more broad use of this also beyond the football field? The soldiers you mentioned, for example.
Yeah, I mean, you could eventually use this for, you know, for anything. Kids falling off a jungle gym in the playground or soldiers. Yeah, I mean, that's where the research really began, was testing in the military. And it's the research is with the National Institutes of Health. So it comes out of there, and they're using machinery made by a company in Lexington, Massachusetts, called Quanterix. And the interesting thing about Quanterix is that they have gotten grants from the NFL to develop their machinery that creates these blood tests. So you have a sort of situation where the NFL may be funding an instrument of its own demise.
Boy, literally and figuratively, though, right? For these concussion diagnoses, a game changer. Wall Street Journal sports reporter Matthew Futterman. That'll be something to watch. Mortgage rates have climbed higher recently, making it even more important for consumers to do everything they can to get the lowest possible rate when buying a home. Here to explain the important connection is this weekend's Jennifer Koschenka.
Want the best mortgage rate possible? Boost your credit score. Janelle Marte of the Washington Post is here to explain the correlation between credit scores and mortgage rates. Janelle, let's start by talking credit scores. What's about the lowest you can have to qualify for a mortgage?
So according to this analysis from Realtor.com, it becomes pretty difficult to even get approved for a mortgage if your credit score is below 625. Now, as you know, the FICO score is on a scale of pretty much 300 to 850, 850 being the best and 300 being the lowest. So really, if you want to at least have a score of 625, and the economist I spoke to there said that if you're not there, you're probably going to be working on your credit repair. So that is the bottom.
Janelle, what's the difference in rates, say, between the lowest possible score that you could qualify for a mortgage and maybe on the higher end? What's the variable?
Okay, right. So let's say you have that minimum credit score. Chances are that you are going to get a rate that might not be that great. And that's where it can be really important to boost your credit score as much as possible. Because, for example, if you are in the 625 to 650 range, the median mortgage rate offered to borrowers there was 3.88%. Now, boosting the credit score just by 25 points. So getting to the 650 to 675 range can lead to a big improvement. So in that group, the median rate was actually 3.75%. So you can already see the difference. And that's why, especially if you have a credit score on the low end of the range, that getting it as high as possible can lead to savings.
All right, and how do we do that? How do we improve our credit scores?
So improving your credit score, especially if you're going to buy a house or buy a car, there are different tricks that you can use to maximize. So the first thing is to make sure to pay every bill on time, because payment history is the number one factor that goes into your credit score. So pay all of your bills on time. But then also, if you have credit cards, and you probably do if you're getting to this point in your life where you're ready to buy a house, you want to make sure that your bills are either your credit cards are either all paid off, or if you can't pay it all off, get it down to below 30% of the available credit. And that's because lenders will look to see how much debt you have and how that compares to your income. And you really want to show that you're a responsible borrower. And really that 30% threshold is key. It can boost your credit score just by meeting it.
We're speaking with Janelle Marte of the Washington Post. How long does that take? Say your credit's not so great, you want to buy a house next year or 6 months from now. Can you improve your credit that quickly that it'll help?
Some of the things, like bringing the balance down to below 30%, you might see that boost immediately. But some of the other things, like paying your bills on time, they really want to see a longer track record. So if you've been late and you pay 1 month on time, that's not really going to be enough. So for the borrower, it really will come down to where are you? You know, how have you been with your finances up until this point? And how much work do you really need to get to the score that you want?
This weekend's Jennifer Koshenka with Janelle Marte from The Washington Post. It's 30 minutes after the hour on This Weekend.
When your business is construction and you get a big job that has to be done in record time, you need to get the ball rolling, which means all of a sudden you're looking to buy enough sheetrock and lumber, steel, and other materials quickly. Business cards from American Express Open can give you buying power to help cover the big purchases you need to make when you need to make them. Find out how American Express cards and services can help prepare you for growth at open.com.
This holiday season, we'll research and shop for gifts online more than ever. But in the wake of online security issues, safety is sure to be top of mind for us as we research and buy our gifts in the next couple of weeks. Here are some safety guidelines from Google security expert Aaron Stein. Aaron, what are we looking at?
We're looking at a lot of online shopping, that's for sure. So, you know, Accenture put out a report last year that said 80% of shoppers were going online to purchase. I think there's no reason to believe that's not going to go up even more this year. And, you know, we're spending a lot of time online. And, you know, I think one of the troubling trends that's sort of in parallel to that, a lot of people are concerned about their online safety. And so I guess, you know, we feel like it's a responsibility for Google to keep our product safe, but also, you know, educate people about what they can do to stay safe and secure online.
What are the dumbest mistakes that we've been talking about for years that we still make as consumers, Aaron?
You know, it's a dumb mistake, but it's also a really clever and tough to spot scam, and it's called phishing. So it's called phishing. It's a really simple scam where a scammer will try to get you to give them your information. And it's really basic. You know, they'll try to show you a login page or a page that looks like your bank's website, and it's not actually. And as soon as you give them your username and password, you've given over your personal information. And, you know, I think these sorts of things are tough to spot. We try to sort of filter them out automatically in Gmail, for example, but it's a really good thing to keep to be aware of.
All right. So what else should we be on the lookout for?
I think there's a few basic tips. You want to shop on sites that have an encrypted connection to your browser. And basically that just means that, you know, when you're transferring stuff like your credit card information, it's really safe, and you can spot that by just making sure the address is HTTPS on the site or it has a green lock next to it. Another one is, again, super simple. If you're online and you see a warning for something dangerous, you really want to pay attention to it. So Google has a technology called Safe Browsing, which basically scans the web for badness, which is our sort of catch-all term for dangerous stuff, sites that spread malware, sites that may try to phish you. And when you're about to go to one of those sites, we'll show you a giant red warning. This is like a can't-miss-it red warning. Fills up your whole browser, and it says, maybe you want to think twice about going to this site. And just to give you a sense, Safe Browsing works not just on Google products, but on other ones too. Protects more than 2 billion devices globally. So this is something that we feel like is really important, and we just want to keep everyone safe on the web.
We're speaking with Aaron Stein, security expert at Google, talking about tips for safe online shopping since 'tis the season here. Let me ask you this. As a Google security expert, do you shop online or do you shop using your phone?
I do shop online. Yeah, definitely.
So you don't have any concerns, or you feel confident that the advice that you give will hold up for you also?
I feel like I'm aware of some of the issues, and I try to be as careful as possible. I think a lot of this is similarly to driving safely on the highway, and you want to be in a safe car, but you also want to know how to drive safely. And it's the same deal on the web. You want to use safe products. We feel like we have really safe products, and we work on that 24/7, not just during the holiday season, but we have a responsibility to help people understand how to drive safely or browse the web safely. And so these types of tips, they don't actually just apply to Google. It's just basic things for staying safe online and shopping safely online.
Yeah. Do we make more mistakes this time of year because we tend to shop more online?
I don't know that we make more mistakes. I think it's just it's maybe more top of mind for people because it's the shopping season. We're looking for gifts. We want to make those gifts special, and we want to be really careful. But I think these types of risks are there kind of all the time.
Thanks, Aaron. Aaron Stein, Google security expert. It's 21 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Looking for a different form of TV entertainment this Thanksgiving weekend? How about this? More viewers in America are starting to obsess over shows from the likes of Korea or Denmark and elsewhere. And so Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Gammerman says streaming services are ramping up to meet the ravenous demand for entertainment from overseas. Ellen, what have you found?
Well, there's such a thirst for some of these well-written foreign shows from the UK and all over Europe and Australia and just around the world that people have a real appetite for it. They've cut their cable cord and they can go anywhere online to find, some good content, and they are. But the problem is they get hooked on these series and they have to wait for the next season to come here, and they don't want to. So they go to pirating sites and just kind of catch up a little bit illegally sometimes.
Wow. So is cord cutting the reason for this?
I just think it's one of many reasons. There's a lot of actually American companies getting involved, like Netflix, and they're producing their own stuff in foreign languages abroad. And that means that they can bring them here to the U.S. At their will, and that's making foreign stuff with subtitles much more of a common thing here and much, more mainstream.
Wow. All right, so what are some of these popular foreign shows that Americans have discovered and are so thirsty for?
There are a bunch of different genres that are just known to TV addicts, like these darker criminal series from Scandinavia. There are a bunch of those, like Beck, Borgen are a couple of names. There are, Japanese anime and Korean dramas are big for younger people, mostly. There are just far-flung, very exotic-seeming to Americans sorts of stories, like a German story about a German series about a doctor in the Alps called Der Berg Doctor, I think it's called. And there's a, there are just a bunch of, you know, sub little cult fan favorites out there around the world.
So what is it about those, say, you mentioned a Korean drama, Scandinavian crime, you know, a doctor show, like, we have all those types. What makes the foreignness of them attractive?
Well, some of these shows are very well done. Some of it is just fun because people feel like it's almost a cultural experience. You know, everyone can. They do it because they can. You go on your Netflix, and based on your past preferences, what's right up there next to an American hit is something from France. And it's all mixed together, and you find yourself sampling and jumping around. And it's easier to get. So I think those things are among the reasons. Some of it is quite high quality.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Gamerman. Her story is called U.S. Viewers Seek Out Foreign Shows in Real Time. So I'll go back for just a moment and explain the delay, I guess, on a place like Netflix with these programs.
Because they still have to abide by these lockout periods that other producers have for their shows in their countries. And so if they haven't gotten the licensing for it yet and it hasn't been released, then Netflix has to wait. But they're trying to close that window and shorten that window.
Thanks, Ellen. Wall Street Journal reporter Ellen Gamerman from New York. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. One reason the day after Thanksgiving is called Black Friday is, of course, because many stores begin to turn a profit, finally, for the year, thanks to the barrage of holiday shoppers. But one thing that can shrink a store's profits? Theft. Americans tend to get sticky fingers around holiday time. Market Watch reporter Katie Hill says shoplifting is a major problem for retailers around the holidays. She's got to look at the items that walk the most. Katie, like what?
Some of the things are pretty obvious. The number one thing, and this happens from year to year to year, tends to be electronics accessories like cell phone cases, because those are usually easy to steal, right? It's like something small. You can shove it in your purse, you can shove it in your pocket and run out. The things that make me, I don't even know, I just am always surprised when I see things like this. On the top 10 list that also made it for things we're stealing most during the holidays, booze and meat and seafood. I'm like, we steal booze? Like, how do you steal a bottle of champagne?
Yeah.
But I asked them that. That can't be very easy to steal. And they said, no, what happens, a lot of like liquor stores put special displays of expensive things like champagne, but they put them in those, you know, upfront special displays, and it makes it a lot easier to steal. So that's often what's happening with booze. And the same thing, meat and seafood, you have a party, you got to do something, I guess people just go ahead and steal that. And again, those things are often put on displays because people, you know, the store owners know people are entertaining, they're more interested in these specialty kind of seafoods, like, you know, maybe there's crab legs out or something like that. And then some people just steal them.
Wow. What's the cost? Anybody put a number of the amount of money that's lost during the holidays for this stuff?
It's billions of dollars, and I don't have the figure in front of me, but it may be $13 billion. I'm not exactly sure, though. What I do know is that, and this is always disturbing to me, you think, well, I don't shoplift, this doesn't matter to me. It does matter to you, because stores, they basically pass the cost off of shoplifting onto just the everyday cost of their goods. So, you know, if a bunch of shoplifting, the store assumes a lot of losses, and then they turn that cost into higher prices for consumers. So me and you pay for other people who are shoplifting. This holiday season, it's going to cost you about $50 more than if there was not any shoplifting involved at all because of these higher prices. So shoplifting, this stuff, while we think, oh, you know, this is, oh, it's interesting, but it doesn't affect me, it really does. It really literally affects your wallet.
We're speaking with Market Watch reporter Katie Hill. Her story is called 10 Bizarre Things Americans Steal During the Holidays. Well, what else made that list?
All right, so number one, electronics accessories. Number two, leather clothing. That, because it's typically kind of expensive, people are interested in stealing that. It also is, you know, a pretty good gift. Electronics, accessories, earrings, jewelry. Again, that's quite easy to steal. That's why that's on the list. Winter clothing. We talked about meat and seafood, booze. Perfume and cologne, pretty easy to steal, too, because it's small. Children's toys. They were saying, this one's quite interesting because a lot of people can rationalize stealing children's toys, right? It's like, well, it's a child's Christmas present. I mean, what's the big deal? That doesn't seem so bad to people, and it makes it quite a lot easier to rationalize doing that. So that jumps up during the holidays. And the last thing is gourmet chocolate. I mean, who knows? Maybe you're tired of shopping and sick of paying for everything and want a little treat, but that gets stolen a lot, too.
How about that? Thanks, Katie. MarketWatch reporter Katie Hill, who's based in New York. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Trending now in many gyms for personal trainers, crawling. Crawling's been used as a physical therapy tool, and now it's been adopted for strengthening and fitness. As a physical therapist at the Mayo Clinic told CNN, you can crawl on your hands and knees. You can also prop up on your toes and just hover 1 or 2 inches above the ground, which is really going to pull in those core muscles. Denard Span, center fielder for the San Francisco Giants, has included crawling in his strength and conditioning training. Some argue that when you crawl, you're pressing reset on your central nervous system, although some dispute that. A chiropractor in the story says patterns such as crawling not only require motor skills, they involve the vestibular system, a sensory system associated with balance and spatial orientation. As you start to move, you're working on your shoulder girdle. You're working on your hips, too. One expert says if she could give one exercise to almost everybody, crawling would be it. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. When shopping for car insurance, consider this. GEICO has been saving people money on car insurance for over 75 years. So if you're serious about savings, it's simple. Go to GEICO.com. After 75 years, they know how to save you money.